No sound.
I'm going to read the whole of the chapter, so you might just want to be comfortable and listen, or you might want to read along. The Lord called Samuel. The boy Samuel ministered before the Lord under Eli. In those days, the word of the Lord was rare. There were not many visions. One night, Eli, whose eyes were becoming so weak that he could barely see, was lying down in his usual place. The lamp of God had not yet gone out, and Samuel was lying down in the temple of the Lord, where the ark of God was. Then the Lord called Samuel. Samuel answered, "Here I am," and he ran to Eli and said, "Here I am, you called me." But Eli said, "I did not call. Go back and lie down." So he went and lay down. Again the Lord called Samuel, and Samuel got up and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, you called me." "My son," Eli said, "I did not call you. Go back and lie down." Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord. The word of the Lord had not yet been revealed to him. The Lord called Samuel a third time, and Samuel got up and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, you called me." Then Eli realized that the Lord was calling the boy. So Eli told Samuel, "Go and lie down, and if he calls you, say, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening.'" So Samuel went and lay down in his place. The Lord came and stood there, calling as at other times, "Samuel, Samuel." Then Samuel said, "Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening." And the Lord said to Samuel, "See, I am about to do something in Israel that will make the ears of everyone who hears it tingle. And at that time, I will carry out against Eli everything I spoke against his family, from beginning to end. For I have told him that I would judge his family forever because of the sin he knew about. His sons made themselves contemptible, and he failed to restrain them. Therefore I swore to the house of Eli, the guilt of Eli's house will never be atonable by sacrifice or offering." Samuel lay down until morning, and then opened the doors of the house of the Lord. He was afraid to tell Eli the vision, but Eli called him and said, "Samuel, my son." "Here I am," Samuel answered. "What was it he said to you?" Eli asked. "Do not hide it from me. May God deal with you, be it ever so severely, if you hide from me anything he told you." So Samuel told him everything, hiding nothing from him. Then Eli said, "He is the Lord. Let him do what is good in his eyes." The Lord was with Samuel as he grew up, and he let none of his words fall to the ground. And all Israel, from Dan to Beersheba, recognized that Samuel was attested as a prophet of the Lord. The Lord continued to appear at Shiloh, and there he revealed himself to Samuel through his word. And Samuel's word came to all Israel. I'm sure you're very familiar with the first part of the story. The story of this little boy in the temple being called, and he goes to Eli. And mostly when we read that story, we finish it where it says, Samuel says to God, "Speak, Lord, your servant is listening." And it's a lovely little story. Reminds me a little bit about Christmas time. We get a lot more visitors at Christmas time because the story's nice, it's about a little baby, everything's lovely. But when it comes to Easter, we don't get so many people coming to remember the end. Samuel's story is a bit like that. There's a lot to note, and it was only a few months ago, it seems to me, we had the family service where we all made our listening ears and we listened like Samuel, but there's a lot more to the story than that. First of all, we think of this little boy, Samuel. He's finding it hard to work out that it's God's call. Sometimes we're a bit like that. Sometimes people tell us, oh, that's a coincidence. And I get upset usually if they tell me it's a coincidence, because I believe that God is there drawing things together most of the time. So, first of all, we need to be listening, but we need not to be swayed about what we're listening to and who we're listening to. Sometimes we have to get somebody to help us sort it out. Little Samuel had to go and get Eli to work out that it was God that was calling him. I wonder if you're aware of God calling you at any time. Don't be embarrassed. Don't put your hand up and say yes, yes or no. But just have a little think about it. God calls us to do many, many things. He doesn't only call people to ordination. He calls everybody to do their work. Samuel was only little, and he had this job to do. Just imagine a little boy having to tell Eli that God was wiping his hands off him. Think about that. That's a pretty tough job. But he did it because he had God with him. You know, God doesn't always call the people that we expect him to call. Here was Eli in charge of the temple, had his grown-up sons abusing their position. It doesn't say exactly what they did, but we know they were abusing their position. In another version, it says they were blaspheming against God. So it doesn't really matter what they were doing, but they were doing things that were wrong, and Eli wasn't stopping them. That was his problem. He wasn't calling them to account and making them go the right way. He was old. It tells us he's old, he's frail, he's had enough. Not good when your kids rebel and do things like that. It's bad enough when they're little and they don't do what you want them to do. But when you're old and frail, it's all the worse, I'm sure. But God didn't call them. They were next in line. They didn't get called. Here's a little test. Who can remember some other times in the Bible when somebody else has not been called, and somebody, a different person's been called instead? Let me give you a clue. What about Jacob? He wasn't the eldest son. Who was the eldest son? Esau. Well, I don't know if you're awake out there or not, but Esau. But Jacob, God called Jacob instead. What about Joseph?
All the brothers.
Don't shake. Say, I don't know. Have a think about it. This is an easier one. Moses instead of Aaron. And Aaron's sister, Miriam. I put her down because she plays a big part in the story there. What about David? Brothers. Again, they're brothers. I don't know why God chose to call us. I don't know why God chooses to call anybody. It's his prerogative who he calls. And he doesn't always call the people that we think about, that we would like to do. I wanted to just mention briefly a little bit about my call today. And it started many, many years ago when I was little. I was quite sure that I could still know what God was wanting me to do. But there's a couple of outstanding times that I wanted to talk about. And the first one was when we left Woi Woi. You've heard of that funny place because we've told you that we lived there. And to us, this was something that was quite a natural thing to do. We'd been trying to listen to God and find out what God wanted us to do. We'd had a couple of times when we thought it was right to go, for God to go into ministry. But nothing seemed to fall into place. Everything seemed to come up with problems and that. But finally, at this stage, Julie was just at the end of high school. It all seemed to be time. And so we decided we'd pack up and move to Brisbane so Bob could do some training. The number of people, friends and acquaintances, church people and otherwise, who said, what faith you must have. Fancy that. I don't have that sort of faith. I don't know that we had that sort of faith, did we? We just knew there was a deep knowing deep down that that was the way to go, that was the next step. Now, I'm not saying it was an easy step. We left our son in Sydney. That was a very difficult part of it. But we moved up here and we followed what we believed God wanted us to do, and it's all gone very well. I don't see it as a great step of faith. To us, there was just the choice. Will we do this or not? Yes, we will. And it's worked out. After we were here and we'd settled down and everything, I had that same sort of deep knowing that I needed to go and do the ecumenical hospital chaplaincy course. That was to go in to do pastoral care, to talk to people. It was really set in hospitals, but it was also for shutting people in nursing homes and everything else. I was a bit concerned about it because I thought this might upset my life a little bit. If I go and do that, I might get called to go into hospitals, and that was something I didn't want to do. I don't like going into hospitals. But applications were announced. You could now apply to go and do this course. I found out about it, and the application was by means of an interview. So I thought, oh, it's much easier to write a few things on a piece of paper and send it away, but I'll go to the interview. So I went along, and I still wasn't sure why I was going to do this. And part of the interview, of course, they said, why do you want to do this course? And I said, I really don't know. Something inside is pushing me to do it. And they just looked at one another and said, yep, that's all right, you're in. And I couldn't believe it. They obviously were very aware of the way that God calls people to do things. Look where hospital chaplaincy has led me now. I spend more of my time in retirement villages, I think, than I do anywhere else. But that's just the way that things go. The next part of the story was, after I'd done that, God was ordained and we were ready to start looking at things, and God gave us a challenge. I'd like you to do this. And we didn't want to do it. This is where it gets hard. It's all right when God's asking you to do something that you want to do. Now, clergy are very good at keeping secrets, and we weren't supposed to tell anybody, but we did have some friends. We rang them up and we said, we think we need a bit of help here. We need some prayer. We've been asked to do this. And they said, oh, really? Really? Well, we better pray for you. And then they said, better than praying for you, after you've been to that interview, come and stay the night with us. So the interview went much as we expected. We got out. Oh, I'm still not going to do that any more than we did before. We went back to our friends, had a nice dinner and a talk with them. Stayed the night, and I felt terribly restless all night. Couldn't sleep properly. But I kept waking up, and every time I woke up, there was this little bit of a song that came up. Never give up, never let go of the faith He has placed in your heart. It was going round and round in my head every time I woke up. So the next morning I said to God, oh, I had a terrible night's sleep, couldn't sleep at all. And He said, no. He said, I couldn't either. I had the words to a song going in my head. And I said, oh, did you? This is the words that He had. Have faith in God. Let your hope rest on the faith He has placed in your heart. When we put them together, they're the chorus of a song that we like. It's a bit hard sometimes when you get a few words out of context to place it. So this was it. This became our theme song, Have Faith in God. And that's what we've tried to do since then. But a bit further down the track came another call that really blindsided me, and that was the call to ordination. I had no desire to do that, and I had no idea that I would ever be asked to step forward for ordination. When it came, I was absolutely shocked. I don't think I spoke to anybody for a couple of days. I don't think I even said anything to Bob for a few days, because I'm thinking, this can't be real, this can't be for me. But when I look back, I could see from a child that God had been preparing me to do this. And it started off as, take this step. Now take another step. Take another step. Oh, look, you're nearly there. Let's go for ordination. And so that was a call that really upset my life considerably, or upset it the way it was, because I was happy doing a few little things for the church. And suddenly, here's something that's really going to change your life. But God doesn't ask everybody to do that. He asks you to do what he needs to have done in the situation. As I said to the kids, it might be befriending somebody. That would be the first step, as you would realise, into bringing them into relationship with Jesus. There's lots of different jobs to do. When we were teenagers, and I'm going back into the dark ages for the younger people here, we would have a dinner at night, a fellowship dinner or something every month or so, and there'd be 100 people that would turn up to these dinners. You know, when we think now, how many kids do we get to youth group? Nothing like that, nothing like 100. But one of the fears that we had as young people was that we'd be sent to Africa. Now, I don't know what was so frightening about Africa. I think it was just that it was somewhere that we didn't know much about, and we knew that that's what God did. He sent people out to there, to Africa. So there would often be discussions about things, and we would all pull back a bit. Oh, I'm not sure that we really want to commit in case we get sent to Africa. I didn't tell Jennifer that when she was here before, because she was brave enough to go. But when I look around, and we certainly weren't friends with the whole 100 people, but we had a little group of friends there that we were with all the time. Most of them have ended up as ordained clergy spread throughout Australia. Not one was asked to go to Africa once we actually said yes. But, you know, there might be something that's stopping you when God's asking you to do something. It's not always something that's difficult, and it's not always something that's easy. Let's go back to Samuel. He heard God, but he needed some help to understand that it was God. He needed Eli to be able to be with him. But then God asked him to do something that was really difficult. This is what he was telling him, and you might remember from when I read it before. The Lord said to Samuel, "See, I'm about to do something in Israel that will make the ears of everyone who hears about it tingle." He's saying this to a little boy. "At that time, I will carry out against Eli everything I've spoken or spoke about his family from beginning to end." So Eli had been warned. He knew that whatever it was going to happen. "For I told him I would judge his family forever because of the sin he knew about. His sons blasphemed God and he failed to restrain them. Therefore, I swore to the house of Eli, the guilt of Eli's house will never be atoned for by sacrifice or offering." You know, it's not a very nice end to that story. But I think we need to think about God is love. We hear that all the time. God is love, God is love. But God is also a judgmental God. He's warned them, and so he's going to continue what he said to them. It's good to think about God as love, but it's also good to think about God is a God of justice and a God of righteousness. And I think we don't do that often enough today in the church. We tend to get it all swept up with God is love. This is the end of the story, and this part's wonderful because you might remember that that tiny little boy in the temple grew up and became one of the leaders of Israel, one of the best leaders of Israel. The Lord was with Samuel as he grew up, and he let none of Samuel's words fall to the ground. People listened to what Samuel said. And all Israel, from Dan to Beersheba, recognized that Samuel was attested as a prophet of the Lord. The Lord continued to appear at Shiloh, and there he revealed himself to Samuel through his word. Samuel was one of the first of the judges. You might remember bit later on in the story when it's Samuel's pleasure and privilege to anoint David as the future king. Samuel was one of the mighty warriors for God. I wanted to finish with a piece of music that I referred to before. Have faith in God. If you know it, sing along with it. Many people know it. It's not a new song. It's been around not as long as us, but it's been around for a while.